documentary on News Talk.
Now on documentary and drama on News Talk, producer Patricia Baker explores how food connects cultures, communities, and generations in Melting Pot.
This is a story that begins with food, with recipes passed down through generations that bring us back to home and family. Recipes from Ukraine, Moldova, Nigeria, Lebanon, the Liberties, and Zimbabwe. These are the dishes that travel with us, the meals that carry the memories of our culture, history, and belonging. The sound that you can hear is Olina cooking.
My name is Olina Zhuravleva. I'm from Ukraine.
She is making borscht in the kitchen, a traditional Ukrainian soup.
Borscht is not just a soup. It's a reflection of Ukrainian culture. It symbolizes our history, tradition, and love for home-cooked meals. With every soup on the borscht, you can feel the warmth and care, just like in our society. I'll always believe it that borscht with its ingredients and preparation connect Ukraine's past and present. Его борщ внесли в ЮНЕСКО. Это достижение Украины.
In 2022, UNESCO included the culture of cooking Ukrainian borscht on the list of intangible cultural heritage. Recognizing food in this way acknowledges that the way the dishes are prepared carries something deeper. It carries stories about culture, values, and history.
Food is culture. My name is Dr. Martin McInomere. I am the chair of the Masters in Gastronomy and Food Studies up here in Technological University Dublin in Grange Garman. And it was the food of Mexico and the gastronomic meal of France, which were the first foods to be represented. But since then, various different foods from gingerbreads, various flatbreads, kimchi in Korea, all the way to pizza making in Naples have made their way on to that list. You know, and food is just so powerful. It's so evocative.
For Olina, it is borscht that evokes the history and culture of Ukraine. The classic borscht recipe would include meat, cabbage, potatoes, carrots, onions, and beetroot, which gives its traditional red colour. The recipes are passed down through generations, each family creating their own variations. For Olina, her dish doesn't involve beetroot. She uses beans and tomatoes instead.
I cook with beans, pepper, but without beets. Borscht is a dish that every housewife has her own difference. No, хороший рецепт тот, который любит моя семья.
As we chat, Olina weaves between English and Ukrainian.
Very good, да, рецепт, да? А ну-ка скажите.
The musical sounds translated in part by an interpreter. But even without every word, I understand what she means. A good recipe, she says, is simply the one your family loves. I had the joy of watching Olina cook her borscht.
Onions, carrots, and garlic. Add a little bit tomato sauce. And pepper. Add cabbage. What? Just 5 minutes, friends. Cook and cook. They become, and friends, carrots, cabbage, and meat, and vegetable, friends, together. Yes, in one pot. One pot together, meat and vegetable. Yes? Ну, понятно ж. Understand? Yes.
What do you serve first with?
A pork fat, garlic, black bread, and little vodka.
Yes.
With a little vodka.
Yeah.
I don't drink. I like champagne.
Bubbles.
Yes. I like champagne, yes. Finish eating, please.
Ah, it's yummy.
It's got a sweetness to it or something.
Sweet? Tomato, sweet. Good ingredients, good borscht. No good ingredients, no good. In Ukraine, when you try something new, you can make a wish.
That's the magic of cooking together. Standing in the kitchen with Olina, recipes become stories.
Okay. Borscht served after funeral. The steam from very hot borscht symbolize the soul of dead person.
That is such a lovely idea.
Yes.
I never heard of that before.
Yes.
It's gorgeous.
In Ireland, that's a wake. We'd call that a wake, where we all come together to celebrate that person. The person hasn't been buried yet. So when my parents died, we would awake them in our home, in their home, and the body's dead there for a couple of days. And we all brought food, and the neighbours brought food. It would be less hot food. It'd be more like sandwiches and apple tart and fruit cake. And that's very traditional in Ireland. And we'd all sit around and eat and maybe drink whiskey.
Super.
And that's another lovely thing about sharing food. You don't always need the same language. Sometimes the food creates the connection. I met with Helena.
Angelina Kuchiruk.
Who is originally from Moldova. She shared her family recipe.
It's a soup named Zama. It's soup with chicken and handmade spaghetti. It's very tasty. It's very yummy. So it's like a taste from childhood, you know, from home. Remind about my grandmother when we dinner with all our family. Originally, I'm from Moldova. But when I was 7 years old in Moldova, start war. And my parent pick up me to Ukraine. My childhood past was in Moldova and Ukraine. War in Ukraine is the second war in my life. So it's very hard for emotion because I have a child, also girl, and her history life like repeat my history. So it's my little not funny story, but I'm very happy I'm here because it's a quiet place and very gentle, very nice people, very nice country. So I just can say thank you for heart.
Tell me about food that reminds me of your home and that you like to eat and cook.
In Moldova, it was soup named Zama. It's very nice. It's very yummy. First, to make a broth from the chicken. After that, I put vegetable. It's a potato, carrot, onion. It's a special spicy with carrot, pepper, onion, coriander. But we don't have a name this spice. We mix it this everything by mixer and stay in 1 day. In a warm place for fermentation. And finish, we put in this soup something sour. It's maybe like a lime, a lemon. We put sivaretka and tap on the soup. So when you put off cheese, you have a whey. And this we put in soup when we finish prepare.
Sounds yummy.
Yeah. Usually we prepare this soup after some big celebration. It's a soup very good after when you're tired after party. Complete your energy.
It's like a healing soup.
Yeah.
That's lovely.
They said chicken soup for the soul. It's healing. We would have had chicken soup, and it was really, if you had a cold or nothing, that would be the thing. They'd always say, do you want some chicken soup? And it was kind of warm.
Heartwarming, because it's very important for me. It's very yummy food. Remind me about my childhood. And I'm try teach my daughter, if I have any opportunity, show her how it's prepared. I do that because it's very important for me, what I know from my family, like history. Food is like a part history of our family.
Delicious, heartwarming food that can hold our history. The writer Victory.
Yeah, Victory. Wabu Ekoma. No matter where you've come from, even if you're like generations maybe removed from that culture, food is often still the thing that connects you to who you are. And so food is a bridge between memories. And for me, I don't remember my migrant journey per se. I came here when I was 2 with my mom. And so food for me has been this bridge between the past, my present now as a young migrant Black and Irish individual, and the future and what I hope the future might look like for, you know, the next generation or my kids. Food kind of links all these things for me, and that's really essential to how I understand myself from the stories from the past, present, and future. It's a very sensuous experience, I think, with food. Food is sensuous. It's smell, it's taste, you know, touch, it's everything. And
you mentioned that idea of its experience. What dish for you brings that feeling, that sense back? And it is very sensual sense.
Mm-hmm. I think for me, when I think of food and food memories, I think of a Nigerian food. Well, I think it's across different communities and cultures, but in Nigeria, we call it akara, and it's like a fried bean cake thing. It's amazing. It's deep fried, it's blended beans. And my mom used to make that on a Saturday morning, but it wasn't frequent. And so I grew up in a sort of a single parent household, my mom and 2 other sisters. And my mom was a nurse, and she was full-time nurse. She was busy. She was raising young kids abroad by herself for the most part. And so to get that time to really cook with love and not just to feed us, it was really special. And for me, the memories that I associate with that particular food are memories of her in the morning, us sleeping and smelling her making akara and hearing the blender and coming down, and she's like, you know, washing the beans and getting rid of the skins and putting it together and then presenting it on the table and having custard with it. And it was a whole experience. And it was that memory sort of depicts like this idea for me of my mother, you know, taking her time to produce something that's beautiful. And I think akara is a really beautiful dish to do that with, because akara is a dish that is also really prevalent in Brazil, and it's called acarajé. Brazil and Nigeria have a lot of links. There's a lot of history there. And so to see that food be really prevalent and have its own identity in Brazil, I think speaks to the migrant experience. And it's beautiful that akara is that memory food for me, that food that connects me to my identity and my home. And it is also feels like this dish that depicts the beauty of migration and movement and the way things change when it goes into different settings, but it retains a lot of the core material. It's still blended beans that's deep fried. So, yeah.
The blended beans shaped and fried that have become food bridges. I love that idea. Food as a bridge between memories, carrying both joy and sadness.
My name is Maria Shinklyaz. I'm from Ukraine, city Mariupol. I come Ireland 3 years ago.
I asked Marina about her memories of childhood and cooking with her mother.
С мамой это моё, ну,
it brought a wave of emotion to us both.
Просто моя мама умерла там сейчас. Я, ну, воспоминания тяжелые, теплые воспоминания, когда ты делаешь вместе, помогаешь. Ну, ну, очень приятные воспоминания с детства.
An interpreter helped us understand each other. And Marina explained how her mother had died and how the memories of cooking together remained strong. the smells, the flavors, they bring her back.
It's very hard. I lost my mom too, and there's certain recipes the same that brings it back. It's really precious though that I have that memory of my mom. My mom was an amazing cook, but never had any recipes. She'd just say a handful of this and a bit of that. Mm-hmm. So when she died and I tried to make her bread, I was like, oh, love of God.
Very hard.
Very, very hard.
You were saying that your mother-in-law is Georgian and she taught you different recipes.
Georgian food, a very good, delicious food. I like. This recipe, Nigoziani Badridjani. Nigozi, this is walnuts. Badridjani, abidjan. Walnuts with coriander, pepper, salt, and little water. Mix, mix, mix. Slice and fry. Fry, fry, fry. Make roll. Make roll. Finish.
You're brilliant.
I'm finished.
Now my aubergine is burnt, soggy. I'm a mess in the pan. I don't understand.
Very easy.
You sound like my mother.
Very easy cook. Make.
No, I'm lost. It took a lot more explaining for me to understand how to make them.
Now I understand. Sounds delicious. So it's aubergines and there's walnuts and coriander and flavouring and you wrap it up like a little roll.
It's a very delicious dish, very.
You try? Я думаю, что да, очень, очень представляет, еда очень выражает, показывает душу, раскрывает и эту страну, ну, от которой она идет, эта еда.
Marina spoke about how food expresses culture, history and family connections across generations. For her, food holds the spirit of a nation.
Считаю, что да, очень-очень важную роль играет еда. Какую еду?
It tells the story of hospitality and welcome. Food, she says, reveals the soul of the place it comes from. And I recognize that feeling from my own childhood memories. We all have dishes that belong to our families, to our regions. And in Dublin, one of those dishes is coddle. Its taste and smell carries memories passed down through generations.
You could smell it. I can still, sometimes if I'm walking past even a neighbour's house, I can still remember the smells of when you're walking up and say, oh, I haven't coddled today.
Yeah.
And in fairness, I would have probably knocked into a neighbour's house and had some, because that was the way it was then.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or you'd be walking up, like, I can remember walking up the road, like, and you get to different smells, like, can I try that? You know, everybody's house was open, it was lovely, like...
Yeah. You're brought in, you go, given a piece of bread and jam, like, or...
This is Liz Duffy and Liz Clayton, who are mother and daughter, and their friend, Angela.
Yeah, Liz Duffy.
Liz Clayton.
Angela.
That's my mum, yeah.
Yeah. So these are your memories of cuddle.
Yeah, they're my,
my memories. That's why she can't talk bad about it, because she's sitting there.
No, but you know what? I think cuddle was something that everybody had, especially around the Liberties area, it would have been there.
Yeah.
Cuddle and stew.
Okay, coddle for me growing up was rashers, sausages. Chop up the sausages into halves so they went further. So you put half sausages I'd put in and dice up the bacon, the rashers, or if you get ham pieces, put them in. Then chop up the onions, peel the potatoes, throw them all in the pot, water, boil it and then let it simmer. And we would just eat every bit of it. It was gorgeous. And loads of bread. Had to have loads of bread, dip the bread in it. Yeah. But the sausages on a piece of bread and butter. Oh, heaven. It was gorgeous. My sister-in-law then started making coddle and she would put an oxtail soup in it.
My ma actually done it the same as you, Liz.
Yeah.
So she'd put like a 5 kilo bag of potatoes into the pot. You'd be eating bacon pieces and sausages in glue, literally. Yeah. It was that thick.
It was gorgeous. Oh, no, the chicken.
And putting oxtail soup in a coddle is a sin against humanity. I'm sorry, Liz.
I know.
Oh, isn't it?
But my favourite part of a coddle was, and I'd work late on a Tuesday and Thursday nights, and my mum would have a coddle, and I'd come home and I'd get the end of what was in the pot. You know, it was all stuck to the end of the pot, so it was absolutely gorgeous. Yeah. You'd be heating it up and you'd be eating it out of the pot while you were heating it.
It's like glue at the end of the pot. It's the best part.
Together and you get little bits of rasher here and there and whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it was beautiful. Yeah. It was gorgeous. Yeah. Really gorgeous.
And does it bring you back, Ma?
Oh, God, yeah.
What was that, 12, 13 of you was in the house? You was lived up in like one room or something up in Kyo Square.
Two bedrooms. No, two bedrooms. In Ballyarlis, in Ballyfermot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was only a baby in Kyo Square. But, yeah, my mum used to buy 3 batch loaves a day. Yeah, so that we'd have food. Do you know what I mean? Like, because the dinners wouldn't be huge, but a coddle would be.
Mum, I think, like, I remember, like, most households around in the 80s kind of had coddles and that, but it was like whatever you had in your fridge you put in there because you hadn't got the money.
That's it.
So you just made, you just experimented with food.
Like imagine cracking eggs into a coddle.
No.
Okay. I'd say if you went into one of them Michelin star restaurants and they were putting a coddle, they would do something like that on it.
Sure, you can get it for breakfast.
Did you? Did
they do that for breakfast now and all?
Yeah.
Do they?
Because it's an Irish delicacy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, we brought it out and they're taking all the credit for it. Okay. Oh, back to our coddles, yeah.
So, Camille, I asked you about the Dublin thing. Now, I'm not from Dublin. I was originally from Cork and my mum was from Bray. Our cuts, like yours, would have always been the cheaper cuts.
Yes.
But my memory of food as a kid that we ate all the time, and one was stuffed hearts.
Oh, no. I love them.
Cheese hearts,
isn't it? Yeah, stuffed.
Yeah, stuffed away, yeah.
Did you have them?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And liver.
Yeah. Oh, we had liver. Always had liver.
Oh, yeah. I loved liver. Yeah, I did. I loved lamb liver. Do you know what I was asked to go down? Well, I used to have to go down. They used to make me go down to, there used to be a butcher's down the end of the comb called Massey's. Actually, that's so funny because it's right beside the Undertaker's. We used to go down. And you go down to Massey's, so I used to, and I used to have to go in and I'd say, can I have a pound of lamb's liver from me, man? No tubey bits. I meant like no veins, I think. And they'd be looking tuna.
Liver and onions.
Oh, yeah. Remember great Aunt Maisie? We had a great aunt that lived to us and she had the weirdest things that she'd ask for.
Pig's feet.
Oh, my dad loved pig's feet.
She absolutely loved. Jeez, it's only when you think back of all the stories. Oh, that's after bringing back a major memory, don't you know? It's surprising, though, when you're talking about things.
But doesn't food do that?
Yeah, it does. Yep. It does, I have to say, it does. Yeah. Like, even if you're in the house and you're talking, like, if I tried something with the kids, like, one day I was doing a 5-piece of bread. Wednesday, your waiting day, you used to just do whatever was in there, but I used to love a bit of fried bread. And my girls were like, what the hell is that, ma'am? Are you frying that in grease, like, and you know what I mean? But, and then you start talking about years ago, like, and I'd say, my mum used to do that, and I used to sit and watch her. She'd do us all our dinner. And she'd do the slice of bread. I always remember she'd do her fried slice and she put her the bit of salt on it.
Yeah.
And you'd cut it, mum, and you'd dip it in the egg. But I could actually take, I remember. Yeah,
gorgeous. Yeah. My mum, right, we had a butcher's called Stumps's Butchers in Inchicore. And my mum would send us down on the bus with a bowl this size. And we bought a bowl of pork dripping. We'd bring it home. My mum would spread it on the bread like that, put it on the pan. Oh, my God, it was heaven.
But I loved when my mum did a stew and she spent time on it, so she'd put in the barley and she'd put the celery in it and all. I loved the celery in a stew. I loved the taste of it. I can still taste it. The barley, the thickness of it, the taste of it. That was a stew. And it was...
We had a chicken stew where you boiled the chicken in the bowl. You had to have loads of barley. And lentils. My mother would put lentils, the orange little lentils. So we kind of got loads of goodness in that respect, you know what I mean? Like, we got all those type of things. So maybe that's why we're healthier. Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, sounds nice.
I just love food.
Yeah. I'm with you, Liz. I love food too. Not just for the pleasure of eating it, but for the memories of love it brings back.
You're listening to Melting Pot on Documentary and Drama on News Talk. This is Documentary and Drama on News Talk. You're listening to Melting Pot.
So I'm Rita Socker and I grew up in Lebanon, so I was very lucky to enjoy a huge variety of food coming from different regions of the country, but also home cooked by my grandmother and mother. And I grew up enjoying cooking also. And this is something that I share with my daughter. So Lebanese cuisine is now part of our cultural memory, but also something we share with friends in Ireland. I've been a migrant in Ireland for the past 15 years, but I'm very much embedded in Ireland as it's my home. And I also have a great sense of what it means to lose home. I haven't been back for many years due to the war and the explosion and, you know, the financial crash. So much has happened in my country that I can't go back.
For Rita, it is Lebanese food that can bring her back. The flavors carrying memories of history, culture and family.
My favorite foods from Lebanon, which is kibbeh. So kibbeh in Lebanon represents a variety of ingredients and ways of cooking. So the basic ingredients are onions, burgul, the cracked wheat, and spices, the Lebanese baharat, which is a mix of spices. But then you can add either meat, lamb usually, or vegetables. Could be pumpkin, lentil, potatoes, spinach, chard. You can have a vegetarian option too. You can make it either mashwiye, which is grilled in Arabic, and it would be in patties, grilled on the barbecue. It could be flat in layers, two layers of the mix, and then in between you would put pine nuts and more onions and all of that. And you can also have it as part of a stew. So it would be in for instance, Lebaniye, Laban is yogurt, so in a garlicky, minty yogurt kind of sauce, or Ernabiye, which is in a tahini, pomegranate juice, oranges mix. So there's a huge variety there, and it's influenced mostly by Syrian cuisine also. That is a wonderful cuisine that is very much interconnected with Lebanese cuisine.
Yum. That sounds so gorgeous.
And is that something your mom taught you? Did you?
Yes. So my mom makes the best. I've tasted it in so many restaurants and I try to make it as well as my mother. It never works. There's something, I don't know, there's a secret she never tells me, I'm sure. But she's so good at creating flavor with an unusual mix of spices. So she doesn't use the pre-packed Lebanese seven spices or what's known as baharat, but rather she has her own mix that's appropriate for the kibbeh and for each kind of kibbeh. And she takes so much time with making the layers perfect, whereas I rush and make it very imperfectly.
Your face lit up when you talked about getting it from your mum, and like I have the same memories with my mum, and I can't recreate. And like I don't know for you, but for me, the Irish mum's recipe has no measurement. It's a handful.
Isn't it?
It's like, you'd be not how much, my you know yourself. I don't know.
Exactly.
And I know way I know now because you passed. Thanks very much.
She's never measured anything when she's cooking the kibbeh or any other, you know, dish that we make.
Like Rita, I had the privilege of learning my mum's recipes by watching her in the kitchen. So now when I cook them, I can bring a sense of her back to me. And I can share that with my own daughter. This is such a familiar scene throughout the world.
Okay, my name is Noma Kwasengwenya. Originally, I'm from Zimbabwe. I remember the best dish which my grandmother used to cook for us and my mom as well. It's pap made of maize meal. It's our staple food and beef stew with vegetables on the side. The pap is the most common meal in Zimbabwe. Everyone. You make pap, then on the side is your choice, whether you want to eat it with chicken stew, whether you want to eat it with braai, meat, or whatever, you know. But the pap is the main dish. The pap is the main dish from Zimbabwe. It's white. It's done. It's like a mashed potato to give you the mind. like when you look at it in the mind, it's like it's done like a mashed potato.
Yeah, we eat it with our own hands. You dip, you eat, you dip, you eat.
I want to try it.
Oh my God, you have to. You have to.
I can imagine it being all num num.
You know what? Some people, when they try to taste it, they say, it's like if you taste it without mixing with meat, you say, I don't feel the taste. But it's better you take the pap and mix with your stew, whatever, chicken, veggies, and it's amazing. Oh, my God. Then you'll make your beef stew on the side. As Africans, we like it fried. You fry it a little bit to be brownish, to give it flavor. You put onion, tomatoes. There's a raja, our African raja. We always put in our meals raja.
What's that like?
It's like a curry. It's like a curry spice. You mix as you want to it to be, the spices to bring that flavor. When you make beef stew, beef, you mix with the green vegetables. Our vegetables is like kale. You cook in a big pot. You eat together. That was lovely.
That sounds yummy.
It is, really. It is. It's our staple food. It's what I really miss. The spices. Oh, my God. Oh.
Is your mouth watering?
Yeah, it is. When we usually eat this dinner, we gather together. Food brings people together, you know.
Food does lift our spirits, actually.
Yes, it does. Can you imagine when you make a gathering, there's nothing to give to people? What would they enjoy? They go back with empty stomach.
Do you have access to a kitchen?
No.
How is that for you?
It's not easy. It's not easy, especially when you have kids. It's not easy. You have your staple food. You want hot food. It's not easy. It's not easy at all.
You shouldn't have to. I'm sorry that is the way.
Yeah, it's not easy.
It's very wrong.
Because when you have small kids, this time they want a hot meal. You can't make it. It's not easy at all. But we keep on trying, pushing.
Norma is currently living in Ireland as an international protection applicant within the direct provision system. This is Ireland's state-run accommodation system, where people seeking protection live while their applications are processed, a process that can take years. Here, meals are provided, but residents often do not have access to a kitchen. For Norma, like many others, the chance to cook for her children, to pass on food memories and tradition, simply isn't possible. Many community organisations try to fill that gap, and the Liberties Community Project Open Kitchen is one of them. That's where Alina cooked her borscht, and where I got to taste the soup that is sweet and sour and full of warmth.
No, I'm saying this community kitchen is very helpful for us. When we miss our homemade food, we come here, we prepare, we eat with my family. It's because whenever we feel like we miss this kind of, you know, we are craving, we always come here, then we are helped. We cook, we eat with my family. So it's kind of like very, very helpful. I don't have more words to express it, but honestly, it's really, really, really helpful. You miss your own African food at the end of the day because it's what you grew up eating. You really miss and crave. Then you have to make it to close that space.
There is a deep gratitude for places like this. But I have to admit that the gratitude sits uneasily with me. As I think we should be apologising. That these spaces are needed in the first place. That for someone like Alina, she doesn't have her own kitchen. to cook the meals for her family. As I listen to these recipes of the food that bridges migration, time and loss, my mouth watered at the descriptions. But what struck me most was the joy, the love that these memories of food bring back.
That idea of your mum taking the time, I can relate to that. Like, I cook to feed and sometimes you just don't get the chance always to cook with love. But that chance that I have as a privileged person with a kitchen of my own, and what damage are we causing that we need to own and know that we're causing?
It's massive. And again, like I've said, when I think of those memories that I have that are encoded into my being and my person, that's deeply connected to the idea of my mother cooking in the kitchen for us. And what I've learned through that, what I experienced through that, I learned so much about hospitality from my mom. When she would make akara, it would also get packaged and be sent to people's homes. And, you know, or she'd invite someone around to have breakfast with us. And I learned so much about hospitality or how to make these things. You know, that sort of passing on that is not happening and won't happen in the settings that these people who are, you know, in the direct provision system, they won't experience that. And there's so much loss that's in that. I am the daughter of a migrant, and there is children that are growing up that will be children of people who migrated. They might not remember the whole experience. They might have that they've moved from somewhere, and they have to now, you know, understand themselves as a child, learning new cultures, learning new ways, going to school and all the things. And so they are developing and forming identity and who they are in context of where they are now and where they came from or where their parents came from. And a big part of that for me, like from my personal experience and understanding, was the food aspect and the story I just told you, but also the parties that I went to, the things and the ways that food was shared in my community. And there's a lot of children that are going to miss out on that. And I think that is really unfortunate. It's really sad. It's quite a shame. And I think, like, I can't imagine what that would be like to be like, I don't have memories of my mother cooking in a kitchen. And I don't have memories of growing up, you know, I only have memories of growing up eating sandwiches or whatever. I can't imagine what that's like. And the frustration around it as well, because these parents, these mothers, they're frustrated. And I know that too, to not be able to feed, because there is so much that goes into feeding. Even if you're just feeding for feeding's sake, there's still so much that goes into that. But I can't begin to, I suppose, grasp what that does and what that will do in the long term. I don't understand how that even is fathomable. Like, I don't understand. It doesn't make sense to me. Like, it really doesn't make sense to me. It's so strange.
It's such a basic need and an expression of culture to be able to cook your own food, to be able to give yourself that nourishment, to be able to pass down those traditions from wherever you are in the world, that you can actually share your local flavors, tastes. You know, we talk about comfort food. These are the things that give us comfort and give us solace. And it seems that the system has been set up to try and be as tough and hard to put people off as opposed to being welcoming. And we should be a welcoming country. We're a country that was always renowned for its hospitality. Hospitality was embedded in our Brehon laws. And for God's sake, no one comes to your house. You're like a hen in a hot griddle till you have a cup of tea in front of them and in their hands and maybe a biscuit or a sandwich or something, so that you fulfill those two basic duties that go back millennia. That's what we do. That's who we are. And we're not doing that in direct provision.
Rita, who shared her delicious recipes of kibbeh, is a professor of post-colonial and global literature in Maynooth University.
When we speak about the importance of interculturalism or integration or welcome or you know, hospitality, that term that is so important. Hospitality connects with food and hospitality connects with welcome. Therefore, this kind of huge rift between the promise of welcome in Ireland, given that this is the land of welcome, and on the other hand, that basic right of food, sharing it, cooking it, the two basic rights beyond universal human rights are dignity and hope, really. You know, when we say the right to food or the right to housing, but it has to be dignified rights to both. So that is very much denied when you are in a liminal state of not accessing a proper home where you can cook.
True that. Medium of a meal and food, we learn about the culture, we learn about the history, we learn about the people. And it's the most amazing way of actually breaking down xenophobia is through the table, because there's more that unites us than separates us at the table. And one of the most amazing experiences I had of that was that for 25 years, I've been involved with the Oxford Symposium on Food and Cookery. And in the year of the 9/11 attack, within 3 days of the attack, the conference happened over in Oxford. But the meal that evening, by pure chance, was an Afghanistan meal. And it was the most amazing meal, because it combined the best of, say, Indian food with Italian food. It's like those two met in Afghanistan, and it was just absolutely gorgeous. And there was nothing like eating this gorgeous food to suddenly make you look at Afghanistan as a rich culture full of Pashtun hospitality and amazing, unique flavours, as opposed to a country of terrorists.
God, that's powerful, isn't it?
I'll never forget it.
Yeah, I can imagine.
What can bring hope is that this kind of opening up of spaces of new cuisines that are brought with sometimes painful stories of displacement in contexts where these new cuisines are celebrated. There are the painful stories behind these displacements, but also there is a sense of celebration of this is becoming part of Ireland. And therefore, these individuals and families are part of the big heart of the, and the big welcome of Ireland. So there is hope.
Hope that we celebrate this wonderful melting pot of cuisines and cultures coming together to share memories and histories. And if you want to try out any of these delicious recipes, you can check out Biazine, B-I-A-Z-I-N-E, an online magazine which celebrates Ireland's rich cultural mix and cuisines. They have produced a special melting pot recipe book. Melting Pot is a Curious broadcast production funded by Cumasún na Mban, Sound and Vision, with a television license fee. Narrated and produced by Patricia Baker. Final mix, Brian Fleming, Context Studio. Music by Jerry Horn. And my sincere thanks to the Liberties Community Project and the wonderful women who I met who shared so graciously their family recipes. Thank you to those who are making Ireland their home and bringing with them the richness of their culture and cuisine for us all to share.